Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Special episode number 23, Spring Equinox 2011. Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show's Spring Equinox special for 2011.
We'd both like to wish you a very warm welcome. And guess what?
What?
Well, we finally got that wonderful dryad story we promised you.
Mm.
It's a little longer than the normal pieces we bring you, so we had to wait for the right moment. But this is it. Now, here, this moment.
Yes, okay, I think you've made your point. Anyway, don't forget that if you want to drop us an email, you can write to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. Mm-hmm. So come on, spill the beans. What have we got in this show?
Well, our main feature is a beautiful story, and it really is lovely, about the relationship of a dryad to a mortal man. But it's a bit long, so we've brought it to you in two halves.
All in the same show, though.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. We've got four great pieces of music, including a brand new preview from the forthcoming album by the Dolmen.
Yay! What is it?
Well, you'll have to wait till after the story to find out.
Meanie.
Afraid so. We've also got some super listener feedback and the promo for another great podcast.
Brilliant. Loads to do then. Are you ready to crack on with some news and views then?
Definitely.
Now, this is where I surprise you.
What do you mean?
Well, there's so much that we'd like to chat about, I think we should do another reflection show, kind of like we did last year, and bring everyone up to date what's been going on with us and stuff, you know?
Yes, yes.
Especially as we're so near to being able to go on full-time on the show and hopefully bring regular ones.
Yeah, that'd
hopefully
be great.
Regular ones.
Yeah, true. But we've still got the summary shows on the Irish and the preview show on Welsh mythology.
That's right, yep. So I thought it'd be nice to liven those shows up with some music at the same time, maybe.
Okay, now that is a good idea. Okay, so the next show is a chatty chatterbox type show, just to bring everybody up to speed.
Yeah, really.
Great idea. So what we got for our first piece of music now?
Right, now then. In our last big show, that was episode SP21, we played a wonderful piece of Arthurian music called The King's Return by a band that we called Portcullis Minstrels.
Yes, I remember. It was cool.
Yes, well, we got their name wrong.
Did we?
They are actually called Portcullis, not Portcullis Minstrels.
Oh, good grief. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, we're really sorry. And to make it up to you, we'd like to play another song from your album, The King's Return, to call in the May, and it's called Beltane.
That's superb, especially as Beltane is just around the corner. So let's listen to Portcullis with Beltane.
Yay!
Thank you.
That was Portcullis with Beltane from the great album The King's Return. Keep your eyes on their contributor page on our website. They've promised us details of where you can get hold of the album.
They're great. Thank you very much, guys.
Do you think it's time for the story?
Oh, yes.
So, tell us about Dryad.
Well, this is a fabulous story about a dryad. And it's written by an author called Deborah Scheingarten.
Dryad by Deborah Scheingarten.
Everyone knew the Doctor and Mrs. McDermott had the most magnificent trees in the neighbourhood, tucked away on a quiet road in northern Westchester. Their 18th century colonial home framed the landscape of its meandering three-acre lot. Cherry blossoms, magnolias and pink dogwood trees lined the circular drive leading to the front door, greeting each visitor with a sweet and floral fragrance. Japanese maple, flowering pear, and apple trees ran parallel to the house, while the backyard teemed with sugar maples, white birch, and beech trees. Dryad, the tree spirit, lived happily on the land, moving from one beautiful tree to the next. She loved and nurtured every living thing that grew there. Dryad first came to the property in the late 1700s, after the original owners planted all of the ornamental trees. At that time, they hung a series of wind chimes around the house. The soft, sweet music lulled Dryad out from deep within the spirit realm and enticed her onto their property. The original owners put tremendous thought into their landscaping. They designed an elaborate English garden in the backyard that they edged with forsythia and wisteria-strewn fencing. Its hexagon shape formed a maze of alternating flower beds. Different coloured and shaped roses faced layers of irises, tulips and tiger lilies. Phlox framed the peonies and heather lined the walkways. Many magnificent perennials flourished within the garden. Beautiful flowers appeared in the early spring and continuously bloomed through the fall. At the centre of the flora and fauna, trellises wrapped in climbing roses crowned a large gazebo where Mrs. McDermott often entertained. Dryad liked the original old couple that lived in the house. They cared for the trees and planted the property's first gardens. She missed them after they passed away. But the majesty of the trees kept her tied to the land. Many owners came and went throughout the centuries. Some diligent gardeners, some negligent. Dryad barely noticed. Over time, some of the older plants died out, but new roots and shoots cropped up to take their place. The tree spirit had a curiosity about humans and their interactions with one another. She liked the energetic innocence of youth, the nurturing of adulthood, and the quiet reflection of age. She loved her trees, but some part of her longed for a human connection of her own. The McDermott's son, Scott, took to the piano at age 3. By 5, he played the violin, the piano, and the guitar. Shy around people, the child expressed himself through classical music. He brought such passion to his music, but it took on a life of its own. Sometimes the boy brought his friends into the garden. Like most children, they climbed the trees, hanging from their limbs. They played hide-and-seek, tag, and other children's games. Their mischievousness and innocent laughter nourished the garden and entertained the tree spirit. As long as the weather cooperated, Scott practiced his violin in the garden. He favoured a shady spot underneath the maple trees, and the melodies transformed into energy ribbons and weaved their way through the flowers and the trees. Dryad danced to his rhythm inside the flowing wind, spreading bliss throughout the entire garden. Oh, she adored the child's music and always looked forward to listening to him play. She was delighted when Mrs. McDermott asked her son to perform at all of her outdoor parties. On rainy or cold days, he did not practice in the garden. So Dryad sat on top of the Japanese maple outside his bedroom window and listened for the muffled sounds to emerge from within. Years passed. The boy became a young adult. He no longer brought his friends to play in the garden. In fact, his interests led him out of the backyard, away from his parents' house. Scott's skills surpassed most musicians, and the world recognized him as an up-and-coming virtuoso. In high school, he went on tour, leaving Dryad alone in relative silence for longer and longer periods. He spent his undergraduate studies at Juilliard, returning home only on weekends to practice under the trees. One day, the young man packed his things and moved out of the house, leaving Dryad alone with her trees, the now modern wind chimes, and Mrs. McDermott's garden parties. An overwhelming sadness overtook her. He realized how much this one human being affected her. Dryad fell in love with the boy through his music.
I would give up my eternal existence for a mortal life with him. If only he could see me.
Every other creature saw and interacted with the spirits of the natural world. Human beings could not see them. Although what humans lacked in magic, they made up for in cognizance. Dryad became despondent. She felt a great emptiness in her existence without the sweet sounds of Scott's playing. These new human emotions surprised and confused the tree spirit, who was unaccustomed to such experiences. The tree spirit pined for her lost love. Now a young man, Scott visited his parents only once a year during the holidays, but the cold weather kept him inside. To Dryad's disappointment, Scott hardly played music at all during those visits. One summer, Scott returned home and spent the entire week with his parents. He brought his violin and played under the trees like old times, only the music advanced into a complex and multi-dimensional harmony. Dryad danced among the treetops with glee. The symphonic sound sent her into an ecstatic state. She almost reached to the stars. Dryad dreaded the prospect of returning to a life without Scott or his music. She needed to find a way to keep him close to her.
If only he could see me.
And so the tree spirit devised a plan to create the space to materialize in front of Scott McDermott. If she could disentangle herself from the land, she might be able to create at least a semi-physical body. But first, she had to make sure they were alone. The following day, Scott reunited with all of his childhood friends. Five young men gathered in her garden, seated inside the gazebo. Dryad watched and listened as each one drank beer, smoked cigars, and talked about his life's work. The doctor talked of finishing medical school and beginning a residency in surgery somewhere in Florida. The lawyer discussed the ins and outs of corporate law for a patent case he recently argued. The historian divulged the endless hours that he devoted to research for his PhD thesis on the Punic Wars. The actor previewed a few lines from his upcoming audition piece, capturing and enrapturing the attention of the entire table. Dryad enjoyed the immature masculine ambition of the young men. Their idealism both attracted and intrigued the tree spirit, who spent her existence living within the natural ebbs and flows of nature. Scott explained how he dedicated the previous 2 years to writing a master symphony. He revealed that his mentor, a former child protégé named Dorian Marr, gave him the task of completing a violin and piano concerto with a full choral accompaniment. I have most of the score set to sheet music. I can hear the chords in my mind. My trouble is the lyrics, he elucidated. Once I work out the lyrics, a final segment will follow.
Let's hear it,
the lawyer called.
Play, maestro, the doctor echoed.
The four of them chanted,
Play!
Scott, a tall, thin young man with a narrow nose, dark brown hair and soft green eyes, went into the house and returned moments later with his newly acquired Amati violin. He set the borrowed instrument to his chin, raised his bow, and released a symphonic stream of sheer brilliance. Once again, the tree spirit danced. For the first time, Dryad started to assume a human-like form. Her body weaved between the flowers in the garden. All four men listened, transfixed at the incredible music and awed by their friend's amazing talent. For an instant, the doctor looked past Scott and saw Dryad dancing in the garden. He gazed upon the beautiful young woman with the flowing black hair, delicate features and pale white skin. She wore what looked like a gown of white lace and danced more eloquently than a prima ballerina. She seemed to flow with the wind itself, and with each turn she sparkled. The music ended. His friends stood up in applause.
Bravo!
They shouted. But the doctor had such a strange look on his face that his friends became concerned. What is it? Scott finally asked, violin in hand.
You may think I'm crazy, but while you were playing, I thought I saw the ghost of a woman in the garden.
You're right, I do think you're crazy,
said the lawyer.
What did it look like?
Scott asked.
She was the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, and she was dancing to your music. Have another drink,
the actor chimed in.
I promise you'll not remember this nonsense in the morning.
They drank a toast to Scott and his extraordinary music, carrying on well into the wee hours. Scott left his parents' house the next day and returned to school. His professor and mentor, Dorian Marr, presided at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. He lived in a brownstone in the center of the Noy Valley and worked with his students in his garden atrium. Determined not to live without music, Dryad disentangled herself from her trees and left her home behind. She floated through time and space, following Scott to San Francisco. Travel weakened her. She needed to root herself to some sort of greenery, or she'd fade away completely. So she took up residence in Mars' atrium. For the next 4 months, Dorian Marr's lemon and orange trees, which used to give fruit only once a season, now bore an endless supply of beautiful fruit. The hibiscus remained in bloom, the roses released full and fragrant flowers, and all the green growth inside the atrium thrived. Overwhelmed with happiness and surrounded by green life, Dryad enjoyed a constant stream of sound. Music played more than 12 hours every day, although nothing compared to the sophistication and seduction of Scott McDermott's song. Even with the lush greenery and the magnificent music surrounding her, Dryad continued to weaken in San Francisco, so far from her home. She worried that her own trees were suffering without her. Worse yet, nearly 4 months passed, and he still could not see her.
What should I do?
She agonized. School broke for the winter holidays, and Scott prepared to return home to New York. Dryad looked forward to going home. She missed her trees and needed to recharge. She followed Scott to the airport. He put his bag containing the sheet music for his concerto, his violin, and metronome down next to him at the ticket counter.
"Yes, Scott McDermott, checking in for the 11 a.m. flight to New York,"
he said to the ticketing agent. The woman handed him his tickets.
"Are you checking any luggage, sir?"
she asked in a monotone voice.
"Yes, one piece."
He loaded the bag full of his clothes onto the scale. The agent looked over the counter at his second bag.
"I'm sorry, sir, but you'll have to check that bag as well. It's too large for the overhead compartment."
"No, I cannot check it. It's too valuable and must stay in the cabin with me."
"We do sell extra insurance,"
offered the agent.
"No, the bag must not leave my possession,"
Scott insisted. The long line of passengers waiting became restless.
"You'll have to take it up with security. Office is on the second floor,"
the agent informed him, as she handed him his tickets and driver's license. He put the bag down at the top of the stairs, just outside the security office, and walked inside to look for a manager.
"Oh no! He left his music! His life's work's inside that bag,"
thought Dryer. A strange man walked by and looked at the abandoned bag. He took an interest in the metronome sticking out from the top of the bag.
"He's going to take it. What do I do?"
In a moment of panic, Dryad yelled,
"No!"
and physically materialized in front of the would-be thief. Startled by the sudden appearance of a dark-haired woman, the man dropped the metronome and ran. It knocked against the ledge and flipped over the edge of the railing. Dryad tried to grab it but could not reach. Still physically standing there, she projected the device from the airport into the only place she could think of. Meanwhile, Scott looked past the unhelpful security manager at the commotion around his bag. He saw the man reach into his bag and the appearance of the strange and beautiful woman who seemed to materialize out of thin air to protect it. Running outside the office, he stopped beside the woman and found his bag safe and sitting on the ground where he left it. As the thief ran off, Scott turned to the woman and his luggage.
"Thank you. I don't know where you came from, but I'm sure glad you're here. My whole life is inside this bag. I don't know what I would have done if something had happened to it."
"I know. I love your music. I am perhaps your biggest fan."
Have we met?"
He extended his hand.
"My name is Scott McDermott."
All of this activity wore Dryad out completely. As he reached out to take her hand, she faded back into the shadow, disappearing from his sight. Scott shook his head in disbelief. He called out to the security manager.
"Did you see that?"
"I'm sorry, sir,"
the manager replied as he alerted the others to the would-be thief on his radio.
"You were lucky. He must have seen you running outside and took off before he could grab your bag."
Scott looked perplexed.
"No, I meant..."
He glanced back to the empty spot where the woman once stood.
"Oh, never mind."
But the mysterious woman haunted Scott. He couldn't shake her from his mind.
"Why didn't the manager see her?"
he wondered.
"How will I find her again? If she's my fan, perhaps I'll see her again at a concert,"
he hoped. Dryad returned to New York, to her own trees. In only 4 months, the property fell into terrible disarray. Many of the trees were sick and dying. The McDermotts grew concerned about the changing landscape around their property. Some of the trees had suffered from blight, others scourged with frost. Dryad knew she must heal them, or they would die.
"I'm so sorry, my dear sweet trees. I should never have left you."
When Scott returned to school the following week, Dryad remained behind. She did not have the strength to follow Scott.
And her trees needed intensive care.
Let's take a short break there and give you time to get the kettle on.
It's so sad, isn't it? I wonder what's going to happen.
Well, let's have a cuppa while we listen to Jenna Green and her track Spring Love, which is perfect for Dryad, and then we can find out.
Okay, then.
outstretch their branches. They wake from their dreams to find this world enchanted. Promises of flowers and newborn hope, readied now for the silence to end. The air is filled with joyous song.
Was the talented Jenna Green with her beautiful song Spring Love from her album Crossroads.
A really wonderful album worth adding to your collection. Check out more about Jenna in our show notes. Now let's get back to the story.
Definitely. Have you finished your tea?
Yes.
Dorian Marr handed him a gift.
Here, this is for you.
The eager student opened the box to find his very own metronome completely repaired.
Where? How did you get this?
He asked, suddenly remembering the strange and beautiful woman in the airport.
That is a strange story. On the day you left for New York, I returned home from leaving you at the airport. I went into the atrium to pick an orange. As I plucked the ripe fruit from its branch, I caught sight of an object from the corner of my eye. Startled, as I said to myself, what's that? A wooden object landed on my desk with a loud crash. I walked over to it. The timepiece lay there broken in three pieces on my desk, so I picked them up, examining each one carefully. Well, this is Scott's metronome, I thought, but Scott left hours ago. I dropped him off myself. He had it packed in his bag. I saw it sticking out. You know, Scott, if you wanted to get my attention, you could have just asked. Whatever you did with his metronome, it really spooked me.
Back in New York, Dryad struggled to revive her trees. During Dryad's healing, Dr. and Mrs. McDermott moved out of the house. It remained empty for a while. Dryad could not focus on humanity. Her awareness centered only on her trees. Several seasons passed before Dryad and her trees truly recovered. She lost track of Scott and learned to live with only the sounds of the whistling of the wind, crackling of thunder, and the patter of rain.
I reached too high and tried to live beyond my means,
she thought to herself. Dryad grappled with the idea of the impossibility of any relationship between them.
I am a spirit and he is a man. I would have given up my trees to walk the earth as a mortal, if he had asked me. But he never really understood or saw me. This is where I belong. I must be happy with the music of the natural world and stop meddling in human affairs.
One day, Scott McDermott returned to his parents' empty house. The once beautiful landscape now languished in obscure overgrowth. Weeds crawled into the flower beds. Tall grass replaced the once manicured lawns. A layer of dust and cobwebs coated the windows. The once shining white colonial house now looked weathered and grey. He moved in with his new wife, and the pair began renovations on the old place. He painted and repaired the house, while she weeded and pruned the garden. Dryad experienced new and painful emotions when she first encountered Scott's wife. On one hand, the woman strangely resembled her. On the other hand, any last bastions of hope for the two of them vanished when the moving trucks arrived. Wrapped in melancholy, Dryad was slow to respond to the attentions that this new woman paid on her garden. Yet every day she came out to work. The tall, thin woman tied her long, wavy black hair loosely behind her neck and knelt down in the soil to dig. Within a few months, this new woman pulled all the weeds, pruned back the overgrowth, and replaced the topsoil in the flower beds. One afternoon, many men arrived with ladders and saws. They climbed up the trees and they trimmed the branches back. And these same men replaced the topsoil around the tree bases, fed them with organic fertilizer, and laid down mulch and wood chips. The new woman cared for the flowers and the trees with a thoughtfulness that reminded Dryad of the original owners in the 1770s. Despite herself, Dryad grew fond of the new Mrs. McDermott. The tree spirit tried hard to dislike her, but their shared love and care for the property bound them together. Their defining moment came one sunny afternoon when the woman walked through the garden with a series of wind chimes. Humming as she worked, Mrs. McDermott glided through the garden seeking out spots to hang the chimes. She stopped at the Japanese maple just outside of Scott's childhood bedroom.
"I think this one belongs here,"
she said aloud as she hung a long silver set of chimes. She paused for a moment underneath the tree. Dryad leant down to look at her.
"There is something special about this tree,"
she said to herself.
"I can't put my finger on it, but it feels like magic."
Not as she hung the chimes, she sat down below the tree and lingered in its energy. All through her growing pregnancy, the woman took to reading underneath the maple tree. She sat for hours, relishing the quiet solitude. Dryad watched her, returning the woman's kindness. They developed a kind of unconscious friendship. Even though he lived in the house, Scott did not spend much time there. The musical community embraced his masterpiece with world acclaim. Scott toured at least 7 months out of the year. When he did come home, he stayed inside. On these rare occasions, Scott played the piano. Dryad drifted up to the windows and listened to the remarkable music coming from inside the house. Most days, she waited for the music, only to find silence. That year, they experienced a particularly snowy winter. Shimmering white snow blanketed their home in a sparkling silence. Dryad listened to the wind chimes ringing the rattling winter wind. The cold, dark season brought a new twinkle to the property. In the spring, Mrs. McDermott carried home a baby girl. The woman took her child into the now flourishing gazebo every day and rocked her stroller. Dryad swayed the trees back and forth to soothe the child so that the woman had a chance to read. And one day, Dryad swept down from the trees to look at the little girl. Touched by her sweet innocence, the tree spirit kissed the baby's forehead. Mrs. McDermott let the child run freely in the garden as soon as she was old enough.
"Hello,"
the little girl said as she looked up at Dryad.
Can you see me?
The tree spirit asked in disbelief.
Yes, you're the pretty lady that lives in the trees. My name is Marion. What's your name?
Tears formed in Dryad's eyes.
No human has ever seen me in my true form before, much less asked me my name. My name is Dryad. It's nice to meet you, Marion. Would you like to play a game? Okay, let's play hide and seek.
The child answered. As the child counted to 10, Dryad floated through the garden, hiding among the roses, where she knew the child could find her. The little girl wandered in and out of the gazebo, looking for her magical friend.
Psst!
The little girl looked back and found the tree spirit.
These are English tea roses,
Dryad explained.
They've lived here for many, many years now. I remember when they were first planted.
Mrs. McDermott watched Marion through the kitchen window. When Marion returned from the yard, she asked,
Who are you playing with?
The woman that lives in the trees.
I always knew that this garden had its own spirit.
Marion and Dryad spent endless hours playing in the garden. Dryad relished the opportunity to participate in the innocence of human childhood. She developed a deep and personal bond with the child. The tree spirit taught the girl about each plant and every tree. As she grew, Marion added many other wind chimes to the Japanese maple tree outside her window, so that the wind created ethereal songs as they breezed to lull both spirit and child. Marion grew up to be a sweet and gentle girl. She paid great attention to the trees and flowers. Marion and her mother often spent time together, weeding and pruning in the garden. Whenever the wind chimes rang, she looked outside her window for Dryad. Marion took a keen interest in plants, so much so that she took up botany in school. After school, she would walk through the garden and talk with Dryad about what she'd learned. Meanwhile, her father never ventured out into the garden. One day, the teenage Marion waved to Dryad from inside the house, and Scott asked his daughter, Who are you waving to?
Oh, that's Dryad. She's the woman in the trees.
Scott looked through the window at the side yard below. He saw only the Japanese maple. Dryad looked back at him, amazed by how much older and more serious he looked. He now wore glasses, and the tufts of hair above his ears had turned grey. While staring out of his childhood window at the maple tree, he considered his daughter's strange explanation. The idea of a woman in the trees troubled him. He thought back to his own youth as a boy playing the violin, and then he remembered his doctor friend's strange vision on that drunken night so many years ago. An image flashed back in his mind of the woman at the airport so many years before. She was so beautiful. It haunted me ever since that day. I can still see her in my dreams. Scott thought back on all the years he spent looking for his mysterious admirer. He even married a woman that looked just like her. I have to stop chasing ghosts. Unable to shrug it off, he walked down the stairs and found his wife in the midst of washing dishes. He kissed her cheek and said, You know, ever since we moved into my parents' house, you dedicated yourself to the garden. He took her hand and kissed it.
You mean you just noticed?
The woman chided, somewhat startled by her husband's realization.
Yes, both Marion and I love the garden. We both find our own peace there.
Scott looked out of the window. My mother always loved the garden, he explained, turning back to his wife. That she never invested the amount of work that you do into maintaining it. He led his wife towards the French doors facing the yard. I guess I'm just a big jerk. All these years I've never walked through the garden with you, or even bothered to look at the work you put into it. For that, I'm sorry.
Where did this sudden sensitivity come from?
I can't undo my years of neglect, but can we walk together now? Bewildered by her husband's strange behaviour, she followed his lead. The couple opened the doors leading out to their patio, and strolled through the magnificent gardens. With each turn, they encountered burgeoning blossoms in various stages of bloom. "I'm amazed at what you've done with the place," he exclaimed in wonder. It feels even softer and more beautiful than when my mother managed it." Dryad heard the familiar voice.
"Could it be?"
she wondered. She wove through the treetops until she lingered above them.
"Look up,"
she thought.
"Just look up."
Scott stopped and looked around.
"What is it?"
his wife asked. I feel something, something familiar." Dryad almost burst with excitement and anticipation.
"This is it. You will finally see me."
She watched him intently.
"Just look up."
Scott looked all around him. He waited for a moment longer and began to walk again. Dryad deflated.
"He did not look up,"
she thought, as she reverted into the trees. Years passed. Marion grew up and went away to school. Mrs. McDermott still came out to the garden to work and read every day. Dryad resumed her existence focusing on the trees. One afternoon, Scott brought his violin outside. Now an old man, he missed the vitality of his youth. His arthritic fingers swelled, making it more difficult to close them around the strings. He reflected upon the joy that this garden gave him as a boy. He pined for the freshness of life's first experiences.
"There's no greater pleasure than to sit beneath the trees and make music," he thought as he chose a shady spot beneath the Japanese maple and began to play.
Dryad could not believe her ears. She awoke and watched in amazement as the old man performed a sweet and sorrowful song. She leant against the trunk of a nearby birch and watched him, eyes closed, passionately embrace the instrument of such heavenly music. There was a quiet wisdom about him, a reflection that she recognized as the knowledge gained at the end of a long life. He appreciated simple things now, like a sunny day under the maple tree. And when he finished the song, Scott McDermott opened his eyes. He looked at the beautiful spirit standing before him. Her dark hair reminded him of the grain of mahogany. Her skin resembled the creamy blush of a white dogwood flower, and her white lace gown looked as if it was made of apple blossom.
"Have I died?"
he asked her. Dryad chuckled.
"No, you are still alive,"
she replied.
"You're the woman from the airport. I've searched my whole life for you. Now you're here."
"I have been here in the garden all along."
I don't understand."
"I am Dryad, spirit of the trees."
Dryad dropped to one knee so that her eyes met Scott's on level ground. She explained,
"I fell in love with your music from the very first time you picked up the violin underneath this maple. So many nights I danced through the garden to the sounds of your music. And it was your music that drove me to love, to push beyond my boundaries and strive to be greater than I am."
Tears formed in the old man's eyes. He cleared his throat.
"My first memories in life are from this garden. It's the inspiration for every piece of music I've ever performed. When I wrote my thesis so many years ago, I wanted to capture the elegance and majesty of this very garden. I wrote each note to capture the subtle sounds within my own childhood paradise. Flutter of the leaves as they sway through the trees. The gentle brush of an iris as it leans down to kiss a rose. Warm sunlight glistening upon a rainbow of blooms. I composed that piece to mimic the seasons, starting with a light spring joy and then transitioning into the sultry ripening of summer. I wrote a crescendo representing the burst of autumn colours and ending with the cold,
to slumber. Dryad's eyes grew wide.
All these years I wanted you to see me. I followed you to the other side of the country, sacrificing my health and my land, with the hope that...
She broke off.
If you could just see me.
A single tear dropped from her eyes and lay suspended upon a blade of grass. The droplet of water slipped from the grass into the soil as the tree spirit leant in to kiss the old man on the forehead.
You are a brilliant musician. I should have known that you could hear me all of this time.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Isn't it tragic? Crossing the boundaries between mortal man and fae again.
Yeah, that's true. We seem to hear so many stories of the impossible love between the mortal and the immortal. Even if you think about it, in The Lord of the Rings, the same story is echoed in the love of Arwen and Aragorn.
Yes, that's right. Oh, and I also know that Debs is writing a book at the moment set in 5th century Wales that sounds absolutely brilliant. Can't wait to hear
something. Is she? Oh, yeah, I'd like looking forward to that too.
Beautiful story, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it's time to listen to some music. Let's listen to the track from the Dolmens' forthcoming album, Storm, which is so beautifully done, I wouldn't be surprised if it leaves us all in tears.
What's that one, then?
Have a listen to the Dolmen with the old favourite, Danny Boy.
Danny boy, the pipes are calling. From glen to glen and down the mountainside, the summer's gone. And though the roses are falling, 'tis you must go and I must buy. But come ye back when summer's in the when the valleys were hushed and white with snow, 'tis I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, love you so. But when you come and all the flowers are dying, if I am dead, as dead I will maybe, you'll come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an ave there for me. And I shall hear the soft you tread above me,
and all my grave will warm a sweeter babe. For ye shall bend and tell me that you love me, and I shall sleep in peace until you come to me. And I shall hear the soft you tread above me, and all my grave will warmer, sweeter be. For he shall bend and tell me that you love. I shall sleep in peace until you come to me.
Wow, that was fantastic. Taloc really does have a perfect voice for Danny Boy, doesn't he?
Powerful stuff.
Mm.
You'll be able to hear Danny Boy and more of what you've come to expect from the Dolmen on their album Storm, which is due out later in 2011. So, shall we move on and have some listener feedback now?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have a lovely audio message from Annie in the Ukraine. And she's got some useful tips about the website and our Gaelic for us.
Right, so let's have a listen to Annie.
I've just sent you a feedback for the site. It's because of the capped cars inside. I want to subscribe, but it's not possible at all because it's this picture. I just wrote to you that I'm blind and that there are a few other methods to prevent spamming, as I have described in the message. And I just want to say that your podcast is cool. I have listened to the first episodes. I found it over a blind community called Clango Network, and I'm known by Celtic Mystique 92 there. And in 2 days, we have St. Patrick's Day, which is actually my 18th birthday. And I'd like to share my music with you. As I'm an Irish musician, I play the flute and I play the tin whistle. I also could play the accordion and a bit of the bagpipes. I've been to Scotland 1 week and, yeah, I also sing some Irish ballads and Gaelic stuff. I also have learned Gaelic, so I know that. Yeah, you can say Aaron, but most Gaelic-speaking people say Aiden. Aiden. That's how I have learned it. Just offer your friend a few friendly tips. Warm regards from Germany, Annie. Goodbye.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Annie. That really does help. Since you left us that message, I've tried to make the site a lot more friendly for the visually impaired. We have this Odiogo thing to read out the posts and have followed the advice of an external organisation who try and promote easy-to-use websites for visually impaired people. I hope that the capture problem has been solved for you as well.
It was just over a year ago when we got that message, which means that Annie is coming up for her 19th birthday this St. Patrick's Day. So we both like to wish her a very, very happy birthday.
Yep, happy birthday, Annie. We'll see if we can play the listener some of your music soon as well. Have a lovely day.
And now, should we have a promo?
Yeah, great idea. Following on from the Dolmen song we heard earlier, I also heard them on another show, one called Beau on the Go.
Pardon?
Beau on the Go.
Hmm.
Beau is the host of the show, and he takes us into the realms of many different spiritual paths.
Oh, I see. Let's have a listen to the promo then.
Hello, and welcome to Beau on the Go Pod Show. I'm your host, Sam, and I invite you to join me as I hitchhike my way through the spiritual realm. Each episode, we will be contemplating various spiritual paths. The show notes will be available on the website, bowonthego.info. So sit back and let's enjoy the journey together.
Well, that sounds cool.
Yeah, and I noticed that he's had a show on shamanism and has played some of Kiliana's new album, Elemental, as well as that track from The Dolmen.
Yes, all good stuff. We better catch up with his show, really.
Now, we normally leave you with a song from Dave the Bard on our seasonal holiday specials. Something that captures the spirit of the season.
True. So what have we got for the spring equinox? Although it could be the autumn equinox, remembering our friends in the southern hemisphere.
That's true. Well, Dave has a new album out.
Oh yes, a live one.
Yes, it's his first live album. So let's have a listen to the Song of Arwen from that album.
Is this working? Oh, it is. Hello. Have you got your singing voices on, if you know them? Yeah. I'm going to start with my prayer to the earth, if you like. It's called the Song of Arwen. It is you who are broken. You are part of me. Some of you have broken, but others might never be free. Oh, this is my song. This is my voice. These are my words. This is my choice. Hear me now. Take heed of my words. Love me now. Your spirit will fly. You're gonna sing with me, go on. Fly. I am the wild and I am the tame. I am the calm and I am the storm. Sound of your beating heart, and I am your blood, and I am your bone. It is you who are broken. You are part of me. There is no separation. So dance, sing and be free. This is my song, this is my voice. These are my words, this is my choice. Hear me now, take heed of my words. Love me now. Oh, this is my song, this is my voice. These are my words, this is my choice. Hear me now, take heed of my words. Love me now, and your spirit will fly. Spirit will fly.
Thank you.
That was Dave the Bard with the beautiful live version of The Spirit of Albion. No, it wasn't. I mean, I really, really like The Spirit of Albion. It just wasn't that song.
Nope.
That was Dave the Bard with the beautiful live version of The Song of Arwen from his latest album, As Nature Intended.
That was beautiful, Dave. Thank you.
And now that really does wrap up our show. So until next time, we'd like to wish you many blessings until the next show.
Hulvaur. Episode Special 32, Equinox Spring 2011 Special.
What?
That attempt at humour just completely left you cold.
It's like... absolutely, completely, straight over my head.
Carry on, carry on.
Sorry, I didn't realise that was supposed to be funny. I bet you are.
don't quit your day job. Yes, I'm looking forward to listening to the Song of Albion.
Absolutely.
The Spirit of Arwen.
Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show Spring X... blah, 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 blah. Now I'm at it.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. Available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. And find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.